This week's episode has been brought to you by the paid subscribership of Tana and Kathy. You too can be a paid subscriber by going to thedadpodcast.com and clicking on the PayPal buttons or the Patreon logo on the right-hand side. For just $24 a year, you could change our lives. Enjoy the show.
Listen to me, listen to my words as they vanish. Let's go chase the sun.
Welcome to the Dad Podcast, episode number 115. With me, as always, is the one, the only, Paco Lancini, a.k.a. Adam Dooley. How come already chuckling because of so much recording?
Yes, I'm getting punchy.
We've done probably three episodes in 2 days. I'm not sure. But I'm
having a fantastic time, with the live and the chat room and the back and forth and just really getting people involved.
Let's take a minute to just throw that out there. Because we, if you want to listen to the show live, check the description, mixlr.com/dadpodcast. Now, by the time you're listening to this, I'm going to be fully honest with you. Part of why we're so punchy is we've banked up a ton of episodes, but I want to say it because I'm renovating the studio. So here's what you will find via facebook.com/dadpodcast. Go there, give us a like, and you can even choose to follow it. So you get, we always will show up in your news feed. If you like it on the smartphone, you get a little alert whenever we post something.
Right.
I'll be honest, I post a funny picture and a little fun article once a day each. So you'll get two of those. And then what I'm going to do is once a day now, I'm going to post pictures of the process of us renovating the studio. So,
oh, that's cool. And listen, if you enjoy the show, you download it, you listen to the show. Here's the thing. The show continues. It continues on Facebook. It continues in these chat rooms. It goes on. So you can get a good amount of that hilarity and information. Jesus Christ. I can't talk.
Jesus Christ will be there.
Exactly. At Jesus Christ. So get involved. Jump in and join us.
A lot of listeners. It's fun. You and I were talking about it off air, but it's fun to watch the listeners interact, not just with us, with each other.
Right. Like, and here's the thing. You can do it. You don't have to get involved. You can just sit there and read the Facebook.
Right.
You don't have to type in. You don't have to. If you're not a caller, you're not a doer, but you're a watcher.
Yeah.
You're a voyeur.
You can be a voyeur. Now, here's what it does require. I'll be honest with you, but
don't
be scared because other people have done it, and I have done it myself.
There's when a DNA sample required.
Yes, exactly. You send in a little bit of your splooge and
Jesus,
what you said, DNA, isn't that what it is?
That's, I guess
why
so.
Else do you blacklight a hotel room? I'm not looking for blood. Who cares about blood? No, you can you put in your email and you create a little username real quick, and then that's it. And it's, they don't ask for phone numbers. They're not going to spam you. It's just so that they have a way for when you choose to follow a show like Dad Podcast that you can, you get an email whenever I create an event saying this is when we're recording next, or when we go live, you get a little message that says, hey,
or like a subject for a call in, like, hey, does your spouse's hair falling out? You know, what do you think about that?
That will.
This is why I don't post those subjects, by the way.
Because you're bald? Is that what you're saying?
Well, no, because I clearly...
Because Doreen has a full head of hair. What's going on?
On the spot, I couldn't come up with anything better than that.
Listen, you're doing great, Paco. Everybody loves you. Stop being so hard on yourself.
No, it's... all right.
No, okay. All right, okay, I'm done. So here's the thing. We're sitting here yakety-yak-yak bullshitting, but the meat and potatoes that's coming your way is the fantastic Dr. Tina Payne Bryson. You remember her as the child – I don't know if what she throws out her title, what she technically has, but she's a – I call her a child development specialist.
I'm too starstruck to even
– Right?
She
wrote this – you remember her from her humongous episode of 2 hours where she just shared a ton of info.
And it was like a filibuster.
Oh, my gosh. It was great, though, right?
Yeah.
And she's got a new book, No Drama Discipline. If you need a link, you can go to facebook.com/dadpodcast. And the link that is there on our news feed actually will still give us credit for Amazon. So it links directly to that.
Oh, that's cool.
And we get a cut of the – not a cut. It's that we just – they give us a little extra money for feeding people there to purchase it. But you can definitely help her out. I am about 2 to 3 chapters into the book, I believe, now.
And I believe she said something about – some number of pages being available online.
So that's right.
Dip your toe in and
I
see
need
if
to,
it's
I need
the
to
right.
email her so yeah, I get can that put on that there. On there. She, yeah, on her Facebook page, if you're
her
seeing
Facebook
that,
page.
Her
okay.
professional Facebook page, which I'm assuming is facebook.com/TinaBryson because that's all of her other branding. But you can link that from TinaBryson.com.
Okay.
She said you can go to her Facebook page from there and they have the first 20 pages free that you could view as like a PDF.
Right.
It's a linkable PDF.
You get a real online. Good sense if it's the kind of
And
thing
it does.
For you.
The introduction really does kind of set the table for what you're going to get into. But instead of hearing these two assholes talk about it extensively, also fun surprise headed your way, Mr. Bryson, Scott.
Oh, yeah.
He shows up in studio, got him on the mic, and he's a ton of fun, too.
He is.
As if you didn't hate her life as it, enough as it was.
Right.
And buckle up, listeners. I did nothing short of 12 laps of what's it like to be married to a relationship specialist.
Jesus Christ.
And nobody
stop.
Bit. No hook. I was so flummoxed by that. Like, why is this not? Everybody's just looking like, why does he keep talking about this? So enjoy that while you listen to me go round and round again. Again, enjoy Dr. Tina Payne Bryson, author of No Drama Discipline, available now at all your fine retailers, but particularly at Amazon.com if you click through our banner.
The finest of retailers.
Enjoy.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
All right, we're back once again with Dr. Tina Payne Bryson. But now I'm very excited. Scott is here. What do we have? You're also a doctor? Is this true?
Yeah, I'm an English professor.
Yeah, that's right. Now, did you hear the episode that your wife was on last time?
Yes, I did.
So, did you hear my? Because here's what my concern is, and I just want to address this out of the box before we go straight to your very brilliant lady here. Is what is it like to be married to someone who is a relationship expert? You know what I mean? Like, I have to know.
Yeah, I.
Am I already throwing you under the bus out of the box?
Yeah, I gotta be careful. Yeah. No.
Do you want her to leave the room?
What's it?
Blink so I know you're safe. I am also a mandated reporter for husbands and fathers. So I can keep you protected, Scott. I got your back, man.
No, it is. It's, you know, for me, it's just we kind of grew up. We were young together, so I don't even think about it. But I know what you're talking about because anytime we're with somebody else who's like I feel it when we're with other couples who are talking about kids. I always know that they're aware that Tina is this parenting expert. And so when they talk about their kids or anything, they're always careful to say, you know, and I had a long talk with him before I punished him, of course. And everybody's always, you know, the way you're nervous when you have a decorator friend who comes over to the house, you know, you always know they're
I got
there.
These pillows at Kohl's. I hope that's right. I mean, I got them because they're on sale. I mean, I know I'm not in with the in crowd or anything like that. So because you're saying that because you guys were young when you got together, that it's not like it was a transition. It always was what it was kind of a thing.
Yeah, it was just we have the, you know, I've watched her when it's a pain is when we is. You know, with other people lots of times, or when we're at a party, everybody's always up asking her. You know, she's always on. She's always working. So somebody always wants to ask her advice, and so I get stuck in the corner a lot waiting for her to be done giving advice.
All right. So that's all I wanted to know. And you gave a very satisfactory answer,
Thank
I can be honest.
Because
I feel like if I'm a dad and a husband listening to the show, that's – I don't know why. Maybe there's something wrong with me. Maybe we can get into that in the next 45 minutes or whatever. But
I'm sure there's nothing wrong with you.
How dare you. But that I just can't help but think that it must be – it almost seems sitcom-esque to be able to have like any kind of marital – but I guess from what it sounds like is that as much as it might induce the vomit of our listeners is that you guys just are happy all the time. Like because you're so emotionally aware of – you know what I mean? That I know that you're not superhuman, but it's less likely. You understand? I would venture – oh, look at her. She gave you an eyebrow.
Yeah,
she gave you an eyebrow.
Yeah, like, you want to hear about some marital struggles?
Well, I guess what I was asking is that when you feel free to weigh in on this, Dr. Bryson. But that I just think it's interesting that when one of you is an expert, whether they deem themselves an expert or not, mm-hmm. to the majority of the world, we would all call your wife an expert, not mm-hmm. only on parenting but within relationships.
Right,
you know what I mean? If
right.
she maybe her focus is on child development and all that stuff. But when you understand on a fundamental, like biological, chemical level how the brain works, it's really hard, I would imagine, to have a conversation about toilet seat placement. You understand? Or where the thermostat should be set. I just feel like you're coming
into, you know what I mean? You're coming to a gunfight with a knife. That's what I'm trying to say. Like, I guess maybe I'm just putting myself in your shoes too much. But then maybe you, because of your literary knowledge, you could just, can you, do you have the ability to just mess with words and like throw her around? Like, is it a verbal jujitsu for you?
She does say I do that.
Yeah.
I've heard her say that.
Yeah. Yes.
He likes a lot of the polysyllabic words. Is that his thing?
Yeah. And just, he's so stinking smart that he can talk circles around me sometimes. For sure.
Here's the thing though, Justin. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No.
Perhaps their marriage isn't the battlefield that yours is.
What?
Well,
that makes no sense.
You
to
have
me.
All of this strife going on between them when I've seen nothing to support that so far.
Yeah, but they're married. That's all they do. You yell. You yell at each other when you're married.
Yeah, we're in public. Right
yeah.
Now.
Yeah.
And I do know that our 11-year-old told Tina recently. She started to. He was upset, and she said, "Oh, Luke, it sounds like you're real." And he said, "Mom, don't try that parenting crap on me." So they're aware that she has these tools that she pulls out, and so they can recognize what she's doing.
There's a lot of eye rolling anytime anything about the brain comes up or whatever. But yeah, we've been married 20 and a half years. And Yeah, so we've been married a super long time.
That's a lot of years, Scott.
And, you know, it is a lot of of course, we have all kinds of conflict over stupid things like toilet seats and, you know, those kinds of things. But also bigger things about, you know, we don't 100% agree on child-rearing stuff a lot of times. And
but I guess that's my thing, is that how is it that Scott gets to have an opinion? Like, here's the thing. I know I keep bringing this back. I'm doing multiple laughs on this. But it's because it really does boggle my brain, is that I just feel like, here's the thing. My wife is an expert in real estate. She's the reason why we were able to swing this house and everything like that. For me to have an honest, like, argument with her about it would just be, like, pointless. It's just, like, I have no credibility in the subject. I've not taken years of it. Neither has she. I mean, she took an online course for 3 months, and that's enough, you know? I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm just so non-academic that to me, you just live in this different world for me. I don't know, but it's interesting to me.
Well, you know, I'm like, who left, you know, what do you even call that thing, that cup they wear for baseball? Like, that.
Yeah, it's a cup.
It's a cup.
I'm like, why?
Or a jock strap if it's attached.
Yeah, I'm like, why is that on the floor of the minivan? Like, someone come pick it up. You know, like, that's our life. You know, we've got these three boys. But the time it actually does get especially tense is if he'll sort of, you know, I don't know if it's strategic or a reactive thing in the moment, but he'll sort of throw one of my relationship strategies at me. You know, he'll be like, you know, I just really, you know, you just really, I just kind of like, can you connect here before you, you know, redirect, you know, or whatever. And I'm like, don't throw my parenting crap.
I like that. That's So from the outside looking in, it always seems like, you know, you're the victim, Scott. But in reality, it's just as easy to hold up a mirror, and now you have this pressure.
Exactly.
You have this pressure you have to carry around. Like, you can't just be a normal wife who likes to complain about normal wife things. You
I've
have
got
to
these
be a
manual. Exactly.
That never go away.
Never.
Never. That's the thing about written language. It is there for eternity.
It's like a tattoo.
To say, oh, really? Let's check the tape, honey. You see what you said here on page 222.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a tough one. And you know, there have been moments in time where I've been parenting in a non-optimal way. That's a really nice thing.
That sounds like how Scott would put it.
Right. So I'm losing my mind. I'm not handling myself well. I'm reacting, whatever. And I have a specific memory of a time I was talking at our kid. I think he was 11 or 12. And I was, you know, I was going at him and he was completely checked out and I was making things worse. And I saw Scott out of the corner of my eye kind of standing there like to check, like, is everything okay in there? Do you need me, kind of thing? Or maybe to ask him, do you need me? He kind of did this little like hand motion, like connect with him. Or no, he did kind of that, like, across the neck.
Pull out, abort.
Right, he's like, oh, this is not going well. Like, you need to just stop. And, you know, that, of course, I was like, don't tell me how to, you know, it just made me angrier.
Right,
so,
when you're in the moment, it's very hard to get that kind of hand signal.
Exactly.
Yeah. Luna and I try to do that with each other, but often it's just useless.
What's nice about having toddlers is that you could still just spell things.
Yeah.
Only it makes communication very slow. And then my son is now learning to read and learning how to phonetically sound things out and everything. So that just, now I don't know. We're going to have to go to hand signals.
Morse code.
Our version of that. Yeah. We went to Pig Latin, but then it would take Luna 2 or 3 minutes to figure out what I said.
My wife started. That's funny you mentioned it because Natalie literally did a Pig Latin thing last night because I mentioned that the rice was cheesy rice, but it was a different form of. You see, my son used to love the 4-cheese creamy rice-a-roni. That's what I would make for dinner.
Right. Yeah.
And then all of a sudden he just decided it was slimy, just on a whim.
Right.
And so I go, all right. So we got broccoli au gratin, which is, I think, some kind of French term for also with cheese to trick your toddler.
Slimy with green things in it.
Yes, exactly. We're going to up the notch by adding vegetables is what we're going to do. So I made that. I think my wife got it at the grocery store, actually. And I made it. I'm like, oh, it's cheesy. I'm like, but maybe it'll be enough to trick him. And I said, it's like cheesy rice, but because they do like broccoli, my sons.
Okay.
And so he goes, so I go, baby, you know, it's cheesy, but it's got broccoli in it, too. And she goes, ixnay on the easy, Jay. And I was like, oh, okay. I go, I mean, it's no cheese. No cheese.
Just au gratin.
It's all au gratin.
Lots of gratin.
All right. Well, let's get to the task at hand. Yes. Because what I really want to talk to you about is your fantastic new book, No Drama Discipline. Now, I would venture a guess. Here's the thing that I've now realized. I've got it on Kindle, right?
Okay.
So I'm reading it digitally. And the problem with that is that I don't understand why when it's digital, they can't just give you page numbers at the bottom. They have to
pisses
give you
me off too.
Right?
Yeah.
They have to give you a location. And it's like, it's what, a 285-page book? Is that right? For a guy who barely made it through school? Like, I'm like, that's a solid read for me.
Yeah,
but when you put it in a Kindle situation, it has 3,895 locations.
Right.
Why is it locations? I'm not geographically rummaging through this book. But already, this is what I love, and this is why I'm so thankful and so amped to have both of you here, especially, is that I made it through the introduction going, wow. Like, wow. This is good. So now I'll turn it over to you. Like, give us a little bit of like a gist, if you would.
A gist, yeah. So the no drama approach is to really look at how the whole point of discipline is actually to teach.
Mm-hmm.
And we lose sight of that so much of the time in our discipline. And so what happens is we often don't have sort of any kind of philosophy. It's totally fly by the seat of our pants discipline.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens is the kid does something or doesn't do something that we want them to be doing. And we react and then they react and we react and everyone ends up full of drama, anger, reactivity. So what we do in No Drama is to really look at if the whole goal is to teach, then how do we approach it so that we can become effective in our discipline to set those boundaries, to teach them to be self-disciplined people without all the emotional trauma and chaos. And one of the ways we can think about that is that most of the time, the way we respond in discipline moments actually amplifies our kids' internal distress and leads to them being more reactive, which means they're less likely to even learn in the moment. So most of what we do is counterproductive.
They start shutting you out, and so nothing is getting through.
The example that you give in the introduction that I remember, which I was like that kind of like, oh, shit, no kidding, is that the idea that if the idea of getting you to do something that I want to do involves me taking away something that you enjoy or creating some form of a consequence. It's not really a form. That's where I'm kind of in the early stages of talking about the punishment aspect.
Right.
That's kind of where I am. And is that kind of what you're talking about?
So what happens then is, there's so much to say about just that one piece. But the idea is that if we want them to learn, we've got to kind of think. First question is, what's going on here with my kid? So these are the three discipline questions, how we kind of figure out what to do. What's going on with my kid? Like, why is this behavior, what's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
Like if you've got a kid at Target at 10:30 at night and they're losing their mind, there's a pretty good reason they're losing their mind, right? But there are so many moments during the day that kind of stuff happens, but we're looking only at the behavior. And so if we're, let me say this for one second. I think one of our most important tools as disciplinarians is to bring curiosity. And that's what this piece is to
that's
really
cool.
kind of swim through the behavior and be curious about behavior's purpose-driven. What's going on that's leading to this behavior? Kids, I believe, don't like getting in trouble. They don't like us to be angry with them. So we have to ask the question like, this kid knows he's going to get in trouble, or he knows this isn't okay, and he's doing it anyway. That's interesting. Why is he doing that? What's going on here? So that's the first question is, what's going on with the kid? Why is this happening? The second discipline question is, what is the lesson I want taught, or what is the skill that needs to be built? And the third question is, what's the best way to do that? And I really believe that behavior is communication. So the kids, they're doing these things over and over and over, And what they're doing is they're telling us with like a little blowhorn, these are the skills I need help with. This is what I need help building. And so then discipline then becomes opportunity because we can look at the behaviors and go, okay, my kid's showing me what he needs skill building in. She's showing me what skills she doesn't yet have. And that becomes my discipline task, is to provide her experiences to build those skills and to teach those lessons. So it's a totally different way to think about behavior.
Right. That's when I was – it was this thing that was like, oh, no kidding. And then immediately after I had that realization, it was very frightening. And I'm like – because in a sense, you've taken just about every tool that I have learned from, you know, previous generations, people around me, and said, you might want to rethink this. You know? And so as a parent, you're like, oh, boy. I mean, it's exciting in the sense that it's like I can't wait to obviously finish through the rest of the book and go, okay, now I have it.
Yeah.
And I would imagine just off the first, you know, step one right out of the box is that it's going to have to be where I can answer those three questions in a moment's notice. Like, it's going to be a slow process of building and going through that, right? Like,
well, and we know the brain changes from experience. And you're right. It's going to be a rare moment, at least in the beginning, to, you know, go, I'm going to thoughtfully consider these three questions before I respond. I mean, that's, you know, because in the meanwhile, you know, the other one's dumping their slimy, cheesy things, you know, down your...
Throwing rice all over the living room.
But what happens
I'm telling my wife, I just need a moment. Yes, I got to just... Hold on. I need a dry erase board.
Right. But what does happen is that if we start kind of thinking about their behavior differently, like, oh, this is a moment of skill, this is skill building, this kid needs something here, then what happens is it starts becoming automatic, is to think about it in this way. Because, you know, I don't go through those steps, you know, every time. And there are lots of moments, especially as our kids get older, where we do have a longer pause between what happened. Like, we find out about something, they won't even get home from school until we have time to do that more as they get older. But if we think about discipline through this new lens, we start kind of practicing it, things can really shift. And I think, you know, one of the things I had a parenting group last week, and I had a mom in my group that said, you know, honestly, like, lots of people were talking about how the book had been transformational for them and how much they were loving it. And so that was really fun. But there was one mom in my group who said, honestly, this book fills me with anxiety. Mm-hmm. When I look at it, I go, oh, my God, like, I can't even think about doing one thing differently. And, you know, here she was, a mom who I was like, how much sleep did you get last night? And she was like totally fried already. Right. I'm like, all right, look, don't even read the book right now. You need to take care of yourself. That's number one. But number two is, I would say, you know, the most important thing, you know, this book is full of strategies and tools and things that we can sort of replace other things that aren't productive. Because the truth is, you know, like, parents will be like, I keep disciplining him and he keeps doing it. And it's like, then we assume that the problem is with the kid. And instead of going, I wonder if what I'm doing isn't working. Like, is this
impossible?
Not effective, right?
We are adults.
Exactly.
They are simple-minded flesh slugs.
So the idea is,
I'm going to have to ask you to leave, doctor.
So there's one technique in the book that I think really is a great place to start if you feel sort of overwhelmed or you feel like I can't do all of that stuff. And it's really based on the idea that the brain is either in a receptive state of mind or a reactive state of mind. Mm. The only time we can learn is when the brain is in a receptive state, okay? So usually when discipline things happen, a kid's already in a reactive state, and that's when we talk at them and we do all this stuff, but they're not even open to really learning. So what we talk about in the book, the whole approach is called connect and redirect, and it's the idea that our first job when our kids are in this reactive state is to help calm them down and soothe them. Now, this is not the same thing as being permissive. It's not the same thing as letting them get away with behavior. It's a really strategic, effective way to say, okay, I'm going to lower their nervous system arousal, right? Uh-huh. I'm going to calm them down and connect with them, and I'll tell you how we suggest to do that. And then once they're back in a receptive state, that's where we do this really important discipline thing where we go, hey, I know you know it's not okay to slap your brother, so what was happening for you? And you have this reflective dialogue and you do all of this stuff, because if the whole point of discipline is to teach, they have to be in a teachable moment. So the timing matters so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the trick that we're telling people, and I shouldn't say trick, the tool is...
I like trick. Why not?
I might have talked about it last time I was here. It's the one thing that probably the most people have come back to me and said, this is magic, and it has changed our family's chaos level, is that the child is freaking out, melting down, irrational, And which is, by the way, where we typically try and use all kinds of logic, which is we're ridiculous. We really are. Is to instead get down below the child's eye level. Mm-hmm. Did we talk about
this
last time?
Yes, laying on the floor and say, I see you're upset.
Yeah, with lots of empathy.
Yes.
Right? Not like, I can tell you're upset right now. Like, that's not going to work as much as...
That's why it hasn't been working.
So you got to be like, oh, you're having such a... Oh, you're so angry. So you bring all this empathy, and you're like, I'm right here with you. Then they calm down. They get back into this receptive place, and then that's where you go in for the, what happened here, and what, you know, and you address the behavior. And so if our whole goal is to teach, you asked about consequences and punishment... If our whole goal is to teach and you're having this conversation with your kid, most of the time once they get back into this receptive state, they're like, I'm really sorry. Like they know that they and they feel bad about it. And once you have that conversation, you see that, you're like, oh, well, they already know it. The lesson has already been taught. They need practice skill building. So I often find that giving consequences doesn't even make sense in that moment because they've already learned the lesson. And if I were at that point to execute a consequence, it's going to create more disconnection. And the child, instead of kind of staying with that internal feeling of, oh, I didn't do something, that was not good. And they have that kind of internal guilt that actually, I'm not talking about toxic shame, but that kind of conscience feeling that they have, that actually is hugely impactful in terms of changing behavior because it doesn't feel good. So that stays with them in terms of the next time they make the decision. But if I execute a consequence, once they've already learned the lesson, then all of their attention goes away from that internal feeling, and it goes to me and how mean I am to do this to them. And then they feel...
Or they're thinking about how they wish they had whatever it is you took away.
That's right.
Yeah, because
that... It's totally lost.
Right.
Totally lost the moment.
And it's funny because I always... The reason I was so sold on that is not only because that's what my dad did with me, is that... He either took away the consequence of lack of pain or that I was experiencing at that given moment, or he would just, you know, he was a big negative reinforcement guy, which I obviously that's his way. I'm not trying to get up on a soapbox and say he was horrible by any means, but to kind of speak
do it
to
for you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
He will kill you. No, he will take away your life. That I had a moment last night, actually, that after reading through the book, that it kind of snapped me out of it, where I was cooking dinner, doing all the usual things, and I was a little bit behind because I booked a job that I had to do while the kids were still here, and so I was a little amped up, and I was trying to do the thing where dinner's ready for my wife when she comes home, and because she has limited time with the kids, and so I want her to come in, we all eat together, and then they get about an hour and a half to hang, kind of a thing, and so... I ramped up, and so I told my 3-year-old, I said, okay, let's do bath. Come on. I made it clear. I said, okay, guys, I know you've been watching a lot of cartoons and you're settled in. I said, but mom's going to be home soon. I got dinner in the stove. I go, so we're at go time, all right? So let's do this crazy quick, like The Flash, because we watched the Flash TV show.
The pre-au-gratin ritual.
Yes, exactly. Pre-au-gratin ritual, as we call it, or as the French say.
Yeah.
But so I say, all right, and then I do the usual, as anybody who has toddlers can remember this moment. So I'm sitting on my footstool next to the bath. I've got pajamas, underwear, towel, ready to go. Bath water is warming up. I'm like, just nothing. Just literally just sitting there. Any minute. So then I do another warning shot over the bow. I said, okay, all right, I said it once. Let's bring it around. Come on now. And so I don't hear footsteps. Soldiers, let's do it. You know, and trying to make it light because I know I'm amped up. And, you know, and then I hear like a shuffle. I go, all right, I hear movement. I need you to pick up the pace. Let's double time it. Come on now. Work with me. And so the young man comes around the corner and has the audacity to look me in the eyes, and I said, come on, a little quicker, let's go. To walk even slower. Yeah. And I lost my shit. I lost it. I don't know if this means I'm about to lose my child because I'm going to say it to a mandated reporter. I said, listen here, you little smart ass, move it now, let's go. I'm not kidding. And he just like
deer in the headlights.
Well, ironically, froze, of course, after that reaction. And so I reached out, and I didn't yank him. I pulled him. And here's the thing. We talked about it earlier. I will be 100% honest. If I yanked my kid, I would have said, I yanked my kid. But I did. I was calm enough to where I said, all right. But here's where I appreciate what you've done and what I can't wait to learn about in this book is that when I lifted him up, I was still kind of frustrated. And he's like looking at me and he starts to cry. And I said, son, I asked you multiple times nicely to come. If you don't listen, how do you think this is going to go? Like, it's not like I'm doing anything different than what I've normally done. And I'm like trying to say this again to a 3-year-old. That's exactly what I'm saying to him.
Right, right.
So I get him undressed. I get him in the bath. And then I kind of had that moment where in the other book, The Whole Brain Child, where it's like, that was a low road. I definitely took the low road on that.
Yeah.
So I know that my job is to now wait till I'm calmed down, wait till he calms down, and then try and, you know, reconnect. And so it just so happens that after slightly waterboarding him, that really, no, I'm kidding. that after he got in a little bit of warm water and bath and all that stuff, so I took him out. And while I was toweling him off, you know what I mean? I hugged him and I said, hey, I'm sorry I got mad. I said, that's not okay for me to scream at you like that. I said, but do you understand why I got frustrated?
Yeah.
And he goes, I wasn't walking. And I said, I go fast enough. I said, right. That's really, it was, I go, I wanted you to hurry. Like you were getting a cookie from me instead of getting a bath from me. That's what I'm asking for.
Right.
And I said, all right. And I gave him another hug and a kiss on the head. I said, you okay? And he said, and it's interesting to see this. And for anybody who's listening to this, that seems like what you described, that other parent, and what I've kind of experienced just in the intro, is that little bit of anxiousness of like, this is untreaded ground for me, is that it's weird to see that young boy who you just scared the living shit out of, that then look at you and kind of light up a little bit like, okay, we're good. And you see, even though he's only three, and maybe I'm putting a lot of that in his brain, but I felt like he's like, oh, okay, I get it. And maybe not never going to have to yell at him again, get it. But just that it's like, I felt like I reconnected and everything. We can now move on. There was closure. Great. That's what I'm looking for.
That's so good.
Fair to say?
Yeah.
Yes.
That repair piece is so good. And as you know, I'm a big fan of that repair piece. And that those ruptures in relationships, as long as we repair them, can be really valuable for kids, you know. And you know, at the end of No Drama Discipline, Dan and I each tell a story from our own parenting where we lost it and we acted insane. And, you know, I threatened to remove one of my children's body parts. So we tell those stories, too. And, you know, I gave a talk this last week on the book. And one of the things I said was, you know, I said, I kind of got to the end of the talk because I'm telling people, like, so much of what you've known and done, let's rethink. Right. And so one of the things I ended up saying is, you know, I want to check in on you now. I've just told you all this stuff. And if you're feeling a little bit of heaviness or maybe even some regret or some anxiety, that's actually kind of maybe a good thing. And here's what I did with that. I actually showed a picture of a journal or diary I had written in eighth grade or sixth grade. And I had written something like, my room has just finished being decorated. It is gorgeous. I no longer collect unicorns. I now collect sheep. And so I showed this and I said, now, if I were to look at this diary entry and go, that is so awesome, what would that say about my development? Right. The idea is that, you know, if we are looking back at things we've been doing and going, maybe that wasn't what I want to do now, or maybe I'm feeling a little bit like uncomfortable with what I used to do or whatever, that's awesome because it means that we're growing and changing and developing and we're being intentional and we're evolving. And so if you look, you know, if I looked back at my middle school diaries and I go, that is just so awesome, what would that say?
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, we really should be feeling that. And what I said to them is, you know, take those feelings that you have and mobilize it. And use it as that kind of a little bit of tension to motivate you to
it's start a strong anxiety
changes.
Fear as much as we don't want to necessarily, I guess, encourage it within our kids, but it is a strong motivator.
It is.
That, and it is something that I'm thankful. Like, so that's what one of the reasons why I reached out to you in the first place is because, I mean, it started with my therapist. He recommended the book to me, and then that eventually led me to go, oh, now I don't know how to say it, but I feel like I'm a little bit better than what I was before. I'm not perfect.
No,
I don't ever necessarily expect to be, but I hope to be. I hope that I can look back and at least have given my kids the tools to live in a life and be happy, and then maybe whatever starting point I left them with, they can then work and improve on for, you know, my grandkids and so on and so forth. But
they'll have something to build on.
Exactly. Well, we have some calls. This one is very interesting. This is Raven, and she has a question about disciplining children with special needs. Go ahead, Raven. You are now on the air with us.
Raven is way off. My name is Drew.
I'm sorry, Drew, but that's what the speech recognition. We're going to have to call you Raven because that's what this call center thing says.
It's an FCC thing.
I'm terribly sorry, Drew. But the computer thought you said Drew. Did it understand the rest of your question?
Yeah.
All right,
yeah,
shoot.
We'll get on the rest of it. My daughter is actually, she's only 7 months, but it's one of those things that you worry about of what they're not going to be able to understand is discipline and loving, opposed to you know, to them just trying to get away with something and being a sneaky little brat. You know what I mean?
Does your daughter have special needs?
Yeah, she does. She has a rare chromosome syndrome. And so we're just, you know, right now we're just in the process of figuring everything out.
I see. So tell me if I'm misphrasing your question. But so what you're trying to do is you're trying to be a little proactive here, right? Your question isn't necessarily how do I discipline a 7-month-old baby. What you're saying is, you know, is there anything I can kind of learn and figure out now so that I'm prepared when she is closer to, say, 2 or 3 or something along those lines? Yes, yes?
Exactly.
All right. Thank you, Draven. I'm kidding.
All right. So how fortunate that you've got this 7-month-old that you can start being really thoughtful about this from the very beginning. So that's so great. What a precious little age that is, too. What I would say is that if we keep in mind this goal that discipline is teaching, that all of these moments of times where kids are doing things they're not supposed to or not doing something we would like them to do are these moments where we can give them practice building those skills. And so, you know, regardless of kind of where your daughter ends up in terms of, you know, her functioning, you know, as you're sort of sorting through what's going on for her developmentally and with her chromosome disorder, is that you guys can come at this situation with this lens to be thinking about repeated experiences change the brain. And one book I would really recommend to you is a book called Bright from the Start, and it's actually a mom who had a daughter with special needs, and she actually did all these amazing things with her to build skills in really exciting ways, way beyond what doctors had anticipated for her. But what I would say is that what we want for our kids, all of them, is to be self-disciplined, to be thoughtful of other people, to understand themselves, to do well in the world. And one of the best ways we can do that is to build their brains optimally. And the best way we can do that is by providing them with secure attachment, meaning she feels connected and protected by you, that you provide her with predictable, repeated, sensitive care, meaning you've got her back and you're going to help her amplify her positive states and soothe her negative states. So, you know, someone asked me recently, what would be the one piece of advice you would give parents if you could only say one thing? And I said, well, I have to have two. The first is to just soothe your child, soothe them. When they are acting out, so, you know, we see all these behavioral problems where we're like, and so let me give an example. The second piece of advice, let me get back to that, is to take care of ourselves so we have the capacity to do it well. but what I would say is, like, someone asked me recently about their six-year-old, and she's like, yeah, but she's so disrespectful. Like, she'll say things to me like, you know, you're so stupid, and you should have never been my mom, and I hate you. You know, they're say like super disrespectful. And I was like, okay, so you can either focus on that behavior, like, you're being disrespectful, nobody talks to me that way.
Yes.
And then you know where that discipline scenario ends up, right? Mm-hmm. With both of them mad. Or you can go, okay, it's like you put the translator on her. And what we would love for her to say is to say, you know, I'm feeling really disconnected right now. I'm feeling my emotions taking over. I'm not really in control of myself. And I'm taking it out on you with the most vile things I can think. Like, she's not going to be able to articulate that. But if you put the translator on her, what she's really saying is, my emotions are so big right now. They've taken hold of me and I'm taking it out on you, right? Yeah. So if you swim through that behavior, you're like, what's going on for this kid? That first question, like, what's happening here? Then the mom can be like, you're having such a hard time. You're so angry. And forget about the disrespect in that moment. Calm her down. And then say, let's talk about how you talk to me. And so one of the ways we prevent kids from being entitled, spoiled brats who are manipulative and all of those things that we worry about is by modeling good connection and empathy. And when we do that, when we provide sensitive care with lots of empathy and still set strong boundaries with that we, you know, hold our kids accountable for, then actually the structures of their brain get connected up in ways where they do become better self-disciplined. So I think just from the very get-go with your 7-month-old, think about all of these opportunities to build skills. I would just say focus on skill building. And it takes kids many, many, many years to learn how to manage their emotions.
Can you give an example of skill building with a 7-month-old? I'm a little fuzzy.
Yeah, no,
there.
Not a 7-month-old.
Maybe with the skateboard. Just
use the skateboard. I see. Yeah. For a second, no, I don't think anybody in the room thought you were joking. that just happened. I was like, what had happened to Adam? Are you okay? I'm about to build some skills for you.
No, but Adam, I love what you said there, because actually you made me think of something else I think that's really helpful. So when our 7-month-olds get upset and they get scared or they get reactive or they turn red in the face and they get fussy, you know, we don't expect them to manage their emotions, right? Mm-hmm. We're like, oh, we know they haven't yet built those skills, right? And so our instinct then is to soothe them, help get them in an environment where they're more comfortable, to kind of, you know, tell them it's okay and hold them close and do all of these things to soothe that nervous system arousal. Mm-hmm. We're sort of like the external brain for this baby who doesn't yet have those abilities. But it's the same thing even through our kids' adolescent years. It's the same thing, is where we want to soothe them so that they can get back into this state where then they can then be receptive to skill building and learning. What would you do differently next time, and those kinds of things. But for a 7-month-old, it's really about just soothing them. Yeah.
Okay.
And then real quick, because I think it is a solid thing, is that, and what I find very interesting is, correct me if I'm wrong, but in a sense what you're saying to address Drew's thing with his daughter having special needs is that that's what's so great about what you talk about in this book, is that special needs or not, it's a really fundamental thing, and that it is, we're talking about a foundation type level. So you have to really, you can answer those three questions, but a part that he might have to consider is what her developmental ability is. Is that fair to say?
That's right. And, you know, that's what we all need to do with our kids, right? You know, so like when our 12-year-old, you know, told us at 6 o'clock on a Sunday night, can you take me to Michael's craft store? You know where this is going, right? He's got a 3D cell model due the next day. Because typically my 12-year-old doesn't just ask to go browse at Michael's, right?
This is just before they lost the body part, I'm imagining. Yeah.
So, you know, this is the kind of thing. Now, in the moment, I don't think, oh, this is a great opportunity to build skills. In the moment, I'm pissed, you know? I'm pissed. Yeah. But later, you know, when I have a moment to think about it, I'm like, okay, so he just showed me something. He showed me that he needs some more hand-holding and a little bit more practice around planning ahead and looking at all of these things. And it's the same thing. You know, we have, you know, I work with, because I'm a psychotherapist, I work with kids that have various disabilities, various disorders. And, you know, even though sometimes they're in these giant teenage bodies, they may have developmental capabilities around certain aspects of executive functions and these kinds of things that are much more like small children. And so it really is, again, about swimming through the behavior and looking at what's kind of going on in the mind and emotion of my child, meeting that need, and then saying, okay, wherever they are on this particular skill, that's where I have to start, and to build those skills intentionally. And we know the brain changes over from repeated experiences.
Yeah. Drew, is there anything else you wanted to ask before I let you go?
No, I just want to thank you. Also let you know that I really enjoy the show. I've been listening since before we had the babies. I think it's like episode 35 was my first one. And and the live chat is a lot of fun. So I'd highly encourage people to get in on that as well.
Okay.
But now I got to get back to work. So y'all go.
Thank you very much, Drew. And if you have any other kids, I just want to suggest the name Raven. It's a really solid name, and it just flows off of your tongue, it seems, to a computer. So thank you so much. We'll talk to you later, Drew.
All right, later.
We have another call if you want to jump right into another question. I'm going to say this person's name is Lynn. And it's going to be funny if it's another guy. Is this Lynn?
No, this is a woman.
This is a woman, but is your name Lynn?
Yes.
Oh, nailed it, that one. What's funny is that the computer says question mark, like maybe Lynn. And then it said your question here, but I'm afraid that the speech recognition is just going to make it completely sound discombobulated. So hit us with your question, Lynn.
Okay, well, my question is that we have a little guy, he's 5 years old, and he's from a hard place. And we're trying to do the care and service method, and we've read both your books. And it seems like that we can't implement any of the stuff that's being told, because every time we try to get on that level with him, he always puts his hands on his ears, or he starts walking away and doing the woo and screaming and making noise. And so then it just makes us dysregulated. And so then when we do, instead of like using the soft tone, we tend to get very stern with him. And then it takes a few minutes, and then he regulates himself. And so it seems like the opposite's working for us. So it's weird.
Well, I think your experience is probably, a lot of people probably have that similar experience. So a couple of things. I mean, one is, every, you know, one of the things we talk a lot about in both books, but heavy, especially heavily in No Drama Discipline, is that every kid is unique and every kid has different sensory preferences and these kinds of things. You know, we, Scott and I have three boys, and one of our boys, when he would get dysregulated, would go into fight mode. The next one, the next kid, he would go into hideaway mode. So he would go climb under tables, under covers. He would kind of go into retreat.
Into a dryer.
Into a dryer. He did. He climbed into
problem
the dryer
solved.
One time. And then the third one just goes straight to tears. So they have kind of a different way of responding. So what I wonder about your guy is that, you know, when I would wonder if maybe you might be talking too much and that it might be flooding his little sensory system. And we'll talk more about that in just a second. But I'm wondering if, you know, you said he actually seems to do really well calming down, being given some space. So we want to respect that if that's what really works for him. I think the main thing is, you know, if it seems like he's kind of telling you that, and if you continue to try and engage with him and it actually causes more dysregulation, then that, you know, that's not productive. So what I would say, you know, there've been times, and I personally really like to be left alone when I'm upset, as Scott can tell you. So I understand that. So what I would do is I would, you know, if he starts reacting or whatever, and he wants to kind of be on his own and then he calms down, is you can just say, you know, I'm going to give you some space to calm down. And I just want you to know I'm here for you if you need help calming down, and I'll come back and check on you in a couple of minutes. And then give him that space. And that way you're kind of not co-escalating instead of co-regulating. The other thing I would wonder about your guy is, and you don't have to answer, but I would, if you were in my office and we were doing a one-on-one, I would be asking you if he has a lot of sensitivity to noise, if he also has reactivity around sort of the seams of his socks or his tags, or like not feeling like underwear is uncomfortable, or having a hard time finding shoes that feel good on his feet. If he has those kinds of, if you have those kind of battles with him and he has that kind of reactivity around feeling of clothes on his body or sensitivity to sound, I might be curious, particularly given that you said about that he had come from a hard place, if he has some sensory sensitivity. So kids who have sensory sensitivities, and you can check out the book, The Out of Sync Child or The Highly Sensitive Child, or look up sensory processing on Google, and kind of look to see if that might be something that impacts him. If that's the case, then he's going to go into states of reactivity much more easily because his nervous system gets bombarded easily. He goes into these reactive states. And then when you try and touch him or talk to him or provide extra noise when he's already in a dysregulated state, that could actually amplify his distress. So that would be something I would want to explore with him. I think just one of the things you can tinker with is to kind of lower your voice. And if he's having a hard time, say something like, I'm right here with you. I'm just going to sit over here if you need me. I can tell you're having such a hard time. And then kind of just be physically present, but without interacting with him. And that might be helpful, a helpful way to think about it as well.
Does that help, Lynn?
Okay, we're actually reading the Out of Sync book right now, but he's fine with, like, and that's where we're always puzzled, and doctors are too, because he's fine with, like, he doesn't have any issues of tags or socks or shoes. We've had that mentioned to us before, but we just can't get beyond even talking to him, like, because then once he is regulated, if we even bring up anything with him, the minute you talk to him about, like, you know, you might start off a conversation like, you did really good in this and this, you know, today. Look at all these smiley faces. We're really proud of what you did today.
He gets really self-conscious, doesn't he?
Yeah, and then he gives us a high five, and he knows where we're going with it. And then if we say, you know, can we work on just this little bit? And then right away, he's gone. He's in his room. He's playing. He gets really upset. And you can never get to the behavior thing with him, because even people say, well, when he's dysregulated, don't talk to him. So we try to leave him alone.
My son Chad is like that too.
So what my guess would be, and again, I would, you know, I it would be irresponsible for me to give all kinds of clinical advice just having this limited amount of information.
What the hell?
But I would.
I'll do it. Here's the thing, Lynn. I suggest next time you see your kid, you just give him a good old fashioned.
What is your major malfunction, numbnut?
And then that should just fix everything. All right, next caller. No, I'm kidding.
All those calls.
What I would guess is that. So here's what I would guess is going on. If I'm kind of trying to look through the behavior as to what I would imagine is happening with this little guy when you start trying to even gently move into that those kind of topics, is that he starts feeling really self-conscious and he starts feeling some anxiety. So what I would guess is, like, if we had instruments to measure his heart rate and his sweat response, is that when you start entering into those conversations, I would guess that his little nervous system starts getting amplified. So his heart probably starts beating faster and he starts feeling anxious. And so his nervous system interprets you talking to him about his behavior as a little bit of a threat. And so he goes into kind of fight, flight, freeze reactivity. Mm. So what I would recommend, mm-hmm. and so some of that is sort of like there's this little maybe underbelly of anxiety for him. And he sounds like, I mean, what also goes with that are kids who are really sensitive in lots of ways, actually, which can be really a beautiful way to be in the world because he's probably also very attuned to people's facial expressions and their feelings, and he can be amazing in relationships and really picking up on things with other kids. It's kind of a gift, but it has its curse to it as well. So what I would suggest, one thing you can try is to, when you start venturing into those conversations, have him moving his body. So you guys are tossing something back and forth, or you're riding bikes, or you're playing some sort of game with keep it up with a balloon. If you can help him move his body as you're having those conversations, that might be helpful. The other thing is for you to play the boob a little bit. And what I mean by that is to say to him, you know, I've noticed that this is a problem, so what can we do about that? Help him be the problem solver. Be like, you're my problem solver. And have him kind of be the one that is having him talk about it. He'll probably shut down a little bit sometimes on that conversation, but you can try that with movement and see if that helps.
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much.
I appreciate that.
Thank you very much for calling in, Lynn, and we will chat with you later.
Thank you. Bye.
All right, bye. I like what you said about the idea that because I also recently noticed this about my older guy. I'm also listening to the audiobook of Freeing Your Child from Anxiety. It was recommended by a pediatrician, a friend of the show here, actually, because my guy will, if he gets afraid of something, he locks up. Like, yeah. If it's a hill on a driveway, he can't move, and he just freezes up emotionally, and I'm doing the, you know, the old school guy thing of like, just suck it up and move on, you know, like, if you do it, it feels better. You know, my dad was notorious for saying, you have nothing to fear but fear itself, which he totally ripped off, I later learned, but
I think Spider-Man said that.
Right? But what I realized recently, when you were kind of saying that, I was like, oh my gosh, that's Jacob to a T, is that there's a little boy that was in his preschool class. Now he's in kindergarten, but we still go to pick up his little brother, and he sees this little boy there. And this little boy was deaf for the first, I think, almost 2.5 years of his life. And so vocally, he's not quite on par with the other people within his class. And so I've taken him on like field trips where he'll ride in the back of the van, and he speaks very simply, and he kind of sounds a little babyish for when you look at who he is physically. Right. And all the other kids, because they're kind of like miniature monkeys, they jump on him for this. Uh-huh. And they kind of like, they just call him names. And what my hope is, and when I look at him in the eyes, like when I was there, I said, all right, come on, guys. That's, you know, because I didn't want to do this thing where I'm also accidentally feeding them. Yeah. You know what I mean? Right. Like throwing a log
but
on
I
their
bet
fire.
I had a couple of good names you could have called them.
Oh, I did. I laid into it too. I jumped right in there. No, that's really what my issue was. Their jokes were just subpar. I mean, come on. What I really was, one of the proudest moments I've had as a parent is that my son chose him to be his friend.
Aww.
And I don't know, but I like to think based on what you're saying is that I do know that he is hypersensitive, yeah. And that he is uber aware of things. Like it's interesting. He is not like kissing affectionate, but he loves to hug and he loves to cuddle. And his brother, very kissing affectionate, and likes to give him a kiss goodnight. You know, his brother likes to give us a kiss on the lips. My son doesn't. He's not a fan. We've never pushed the issue or anything. He likes to get kissed all over on the head. All that's fine. But it's cute because my wife will lay my younger son on top of him and he will give him a kiss on the cheek and he just sits there and smiles. So I think he likes it on some level. Like, it makes him feel all warm and fuzzy inside. But it's just, I don't know how to describe it. But every time he sees that kid at the preschool, he gives him a high five. He says, hi. He goes, like makes us, like, stops. If we're walking and he sees him, he goes, hey, what's going on, Chase? Like, and waves hi to him.
Sweet.
Yeah, very, very sweet, very intuitive, and says he's my friend. Like I said, so you like, we always ask him, like, what'd you do at school today? He goes, oh, I made a friend when this kid arrived. I didn't know anything about him. He goes, I made a new friend today. He's new to our class. His name is Chase. And I said, oh, I go, cool. I said, you guys play together? He goes, yeah. He goes, I understand him.
Aww.
Which it meant nothing to me until like a month and a half later when I'm talking to the director and she commented about how it's nice that Jacob is really like they kind of play together because Jacob's the only one who's not trying to insult him or whatever.
If you can understand Jack, you can understand anybody.
Exactly. That's also true. He really does. It's funny that you mentioned that too because that was a thing that my wife and I always joked about when Jack was a baby and was kind of first learning to communicate. The joke was that we would say Jacob understood him because he'd say, oh, he wants this. And we would say that he – and I think he took that – yeah, like he took that as like a badge of honor that I wear this and that's my job. I interpret people who cannot speak for themselves.
Right. You know?
Man's going to grow up to be a politician or something.
Right. Or something better.
Right? But yeah, sorry. I'm sorry that I sidetracked us with that. But it was I think it's great. And so here's the thing. We're good. I got about 10 minutes before I have to go. This is what sucks about kindergarten.
What?
I would love to do another 2-hour episode with
on
you
Kinder?
And your no. Well, yeah, sure, but just with having you and your husband here, I would like to do 8 more laps on what it's like for you guys to argue.
Yeah.
I just
feel
don't
like you'd beaten that.
I don't maybe we could save some arguments and bring them in and just do them publicly.
That would be great.
Air.
Or record them. Just record them and email them in. We don't have to book up time of yours. You know?
All right. That'd be more convenient.
Believe me, I've thought about doing that across the street. I know.
Have callers come in, call in, and pick sides.
Exactly right. Yeah. We could do like a football, like a fantasy marital football situation. Win loss pool. You know what I mean? And you guys weigh in and have your points.
That'd be awesome.
Because I think in a lot of ways, if everybody's thinking like me, I think Scott, you got a good chance. Because a lot of people like an underdog. You know what I mean?
The sympathy vote. Yeah, right.
But I still want. Is there anything that we didn't get through or get to with the book? Because I really want to give people an opportunity to for you to get your message out to the listeners.
Yes, push into that a little further.
Scott, I'm gonna punt to you. What do you think I haven't talked about that you feel like is impactful or you think that we should hit on?
Yeah, here's the this is a new thing. I don't think I've ever said this to you in this way, but when Drew called earlier and then your response, Justin, when I think one thing is that this approach that Tina has feels new to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And what's scary is that it's not like you're just going to try a new, you know, diet or something like that. You're gambling with your kids.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, Drew said, how do I know if I'm going to if my kid's going to really need something or if she's just being a
sneaky brat. Yeah.
So I think that would be worth hearing you respond to what, you know.
Like a manipulation, like
manipulation thing.
Yeah,
yeah, and then how to? Because that's what we're all afraid of. If I don't set a hard line and discipline hard in a traditional way, my kid's going to grow up and he's not going to have any. So I think hearing you
respond great,
to that would be
because I think so
doing.
Many of us go through parenting with a little bit of uncertainty. Like it's always like I always feel like I'm going from the pit of my gut constantly. No matter how many books I've read on the subject, and it's what drove me to those books. Is there's still this thing of like. I really hope this is what works. And like I talk about in my stand-up now where I say that parenting is like playing craps. You roll the dice, you let them go, and it takes 30 years for those dice to travel across the table before you find out if you did it right or not. There's no way of knowing. Really, you get little moments and gleams, but they're usually also counterbalanced by a lot of questionable moments,
That's
too.
Right. That's
so,
right.
Like, how is it that we can go to, you know, use this approach if we're worried about losing, lack of a better word of saying is like our power, but I don't like that. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
And not even just about power, but where what the kid's going to end up like.
Ah.
That's my feel. Like, we just an analogy would be when we were choosing schools for our kids. There was a school that was really progressive, and they were non-traditional, and it seemed so cool, and it seemed like a good fit for especially one of our kids. But we always had that question: is he going to do okay on the SAT? If we let him do this school where they let him, you know, make his choices and play and all that, is he really going to get what he needs,
or is he just going to be a hippie and join a commune?
Exactly.
Right.
How is he then later going to fit into society?
Right.
All of that, And so if you're saying, all right, I get the idea, I want to connect with my kids. Of course, I want their social growth, their emotional growth, and all that. what if they just end up being assholes when they grow up? You know,
okay,
they,
Tina,
they don't have
solve all that.
Wow. Right.
In like 2 minutes.
Right. Yeah.
All right. So
less than actually. No, I'm kidding.
Because he has another anecdote he wants to interrupt with.
Yeah. I'll just interrupt when you're talking. Don't worry about it.
So here's what I would say. So I think, first of all, a lot of times our instincts as parents in the moment can be really great, but sometimes they're terrible, right? Mm-hmm. So I think one of the most important things we need to think about is just being intentional and reflecting on what it is we're doing. So you go through a day, you kind of fly by the seat of your pants, you get through, and then you're like, okay, did that work? What do I need to tinker with? What do my kids need? But what I would say is that most of my mistakes as a parent have kind of fallen into two main categories. There's certainly more, but the two main ones are, one is...
Scott.
How dare you?
Sorry.
How dare you?
I could see it coming.
One is when I was responding to my own internal chaos and reactivity, not about what was really
Absolutely.
Happening in the moment,
yes.
Like your bath time scenario yes. last night, right? I mean, if he had walked slowly and you had been fine with it, it might have cost you an extra 20 seconds, right?
Unacceptable
right,
in my house.
Right, right, right. Yeah. And the other is what I call fear-based parenting, which is like, if I don't nip this in the bud, if I don't do this, then my kid's
right.
going to end up living in a van down by the river, right?
Yes.
We're gonna. So what I would say to you is, you know, Dan and I have not made up just these strategies because it's like, ooh, let's try something new and see how this goes. This is based on...
This will sell some books.
Right, right.
I don't get you. Like, that was kind of a throwaway statement, but that is one of the funniest things that I've ever heard because it's a solid point. It's like, we didn't just go, hey, you want to write a book? Sure, you write a book. All right, let's meet at a McDonald's and we'll bang it out in 20 minutes
right.
and try and get on the Amazon bestseller list. Let's
right.
do it. I mean, come
right.
on. We did it a couple times before. How hard could it be?
Well, and the truth is a lot of parenting books and blogs are people's opinions.
Right.
And, of course, a lot of our educated opinions are in here. But it's based on, you know, decades of science and pulling that together. So, you know, I did my dissertation on child rearing theory. And one of the things that we know is that kids do best in these approaches that's called authoritative parenting, not authoritarian, which is sort of militant and very rigid.
That's what I do.
Right. or permissive, right? We don't want either one of those. What we want is what we call authoritative parenting. And what that is really where we have high expectations. We really set limits on behavior. We are giving our children repeated experiences of being responsible and all of these things. So there's that piece of it. But the other piece is that we also provide a lot of warmth and connection. And for us, what we've done is we've leaned into that literature as well as the attachment literature and many other things, understanding the brain and the nervous system. And so what we're doing is we are becoming, what we're wanting to do is to move past just what we've learned from generations before us
yeah.
and things that we had done to us for good or for bad, and move parents to a place where we're being really thoughtful and intentional about what behavior means. And what I find is that, you know, a lot of the old ways of doing things have served a lot of us in really great ways, but in not so great ways for certain kids or in other ways. And so what I'm thinking about here is that if we are really intentional and not all the time and not perfectly, then we're going to do a much better job of helping kids build skills. And what happens is that if you just focus on behavior, which is what I think most of the past ways of doing it has been about
yeah.
extinguishing behavior. It's kind mm-hmm. of based on the 50s, you know, operant conditioning animal models that you would apply to a dog or a human.
Yeah, so much of it reminds me of
Yeah, we talked about that
training.
Last
yeah.
time. Yeah.
yeah.
Is that, you know, that's how it's been. And so we've based a lot of our old ways of doing it on extinguishing or addressing behavior. But to me, it's very much like a symptom. So if you have a stuffy nose
mm-hmm.
and you're like, I'm just focusing on the stuffy nose, I'm going to treat the stuffy nose, and you go to the drugstore and you start trying different pills to help your nose not be stuffy, but you never ask the question, what's causing the stuffy nose or what's leading to that, then you're just always treating symptoms. And I think that's so much what the old ways of being have been in terms of parenting advice and all of that, has been to just focus on the behavior and have to do it repeatedly over and over and over. And what we're trying to do here is to say, again, sort of swim through the behavior or look at what's happening behind it and then think about it as opportunities to build skills. So that's, I don't know if that fully addresses what you're saying here, but I would also say, and not that it's a huge sample size, but that, you know, that our children and many of the families I've worked with, and you know, these kids are doing really well because someone sees their mind and what's happening beyond their behavior. And they are given these experiences to understand themselves and to understand other minds and to become self-disciplined
people.
Yeah,
you see, if you're also modeling this behavior as you do it. So if all you're doing is yelling at them because they did something wrong, you're teaching them to yell.
That's right.
Not only back at you, but just they get a dysfunctional tool of how to solve the problem. Whereas if you ask questions and you stop and you examine and you break things down, and they learn that set of tools, they'll be less reactive in their own life in other situations.
And we act as if I'm going to use power and control to. Make sure my kid's not a brat or
whatever. Tell us more.
But that's what we're teaching them to do, right?
And where does the belt come in?
Right. Like, I saw this great e-card or something that said, you know, I want my children to be, you know, strong, independent thinkers, just not while I'm parenting them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I say that all the time. All of his things are awesome for when he's 35, but when he's 5, it fucking sucks.
Right. Yeah. Well, and we act as if we want our children to obey us without question, like, do what I say, do it immediately when I say. We act as if obedience is our goal, but do you want your children to be obedient in the world? Like, no.
Well, that's what I'm realizing. Is
My
dad raised me to challenge authority.
Yeah.
And what I thought as I grew up is that it created an issue where I have problems with all forms of authority. And I now that I'm a fully rounded adult, you see,
right.
Doc. What really it is that it just made me curious. I think it makes me dig through, not the behavior in like the sense, but it makes me go, it makes me find a book like yours. It makes, you know what I mean? That's really what he taught me. And if I do expect my kid to just listen and to be a mindless drone, I'm taking that away from him as an adult. And here's the anecdote that I get to interrupt with when your name's on the logo.
One.
Is that, and I think it's to Scott's point, is that I had a situation like this, and I think it would be easily, had I not had the experience of the whole brain child before picking up this book and starting it, is that if you're a guy who grew up in a house like mine and you start reading these things, it's very easy for you to slip into this, like, this is hippie parenting. This is everybody huggy, touchy, feel good type stuff. And because of the, you know, you're being on the show before and everything, I know now that that's not true. But I think kind of maybe what Scott too, or what I'm saying, is that I had a situation where I went to a friend's birthday party, and the young boy was opening up gifts, and then the dad didn't have a pocket knife to open up the gifts and everything. So I, of course, went and got a pocket knife, and so I'm opening up gifts, and my son comes up, can I have the Mickey? And I was like, no, this is Quinn's thing. And he's like, well, how about, can I have the Pluto then? I said, no, it's Quinn's toy. Leave it alone.
Right.
Like, and so then he walked away, but there was another boy that was his same size, his same height, that was standing next to him. And I thought that little boy walked away. And so that little boy reached into the box and I said, damn it, Michael, leave it alone, to look at another child who is not my child. And he just looked at me. So I said, damn it, Michael, leave it alone. I'm so sorry. Oh my gosh. Sorry. I'm so, so sorry. And the kid just looked at me and ran, rightfully so.
Because you were scared.
Yes. Yeah. So I, and all the adults kind of chuckled and everything. And so, like, I offered to apologize, and I go, would it help? Because here's the thing. I know I just frightened him. So the last thing I want to do is move towards him again. You know what I mean?
Scary, like, man with a pocket knife. Yeah,
exactly.
Toward me.
I put the knife at half mast.
Okay,
so I was like, and she goes, it might actually help. So I said, great. So I go up to the kid. I said, hey, man, I am terribly sorry. And as soon as he heard me say that, he heard me say terribly sorry, but he looked at me, made eye contact with me, and did the thing that Drew was talking about. Or not Drew, Raven, or Lynn, everybody was on the show. Like, covered his ears and went la, 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 and just walked away. So I went, I said, okay. And I said, she's like, I guess we're just going to let it slide. And I felt horrible, but I found out later, because the friend who had the party knew them, is that that was a household that nobody raises their voice. That is the thing that they, you know what I mean? And so what happened was, this poor young man was brought into, from my perspective. Now, I know that this is not right or valid, but I kind of think it's what Scott might be hinting at here, is that from my perspective, he went out into the real world.
Right.
Where not everybody has read No Drama Discipline, unfortunately. Not everybody is trying to create secure attachment. And so maybe an unwarranted fear is that you will raise children who think cannot handle an asshole or seem like the asshole because they're not like everybody else.
I love what you're saying there. And you know, I wrote an article recently that's on my website about how we shouldn't bubble wrap our kids
right.
from having.
Yeah.
And one of the, you know, and in the book we talk about this, and on my website I have an article called "Why It's So Valuable When We Mess Up." And the truth is that if we are lovely and perfect all the time, our kids don't develop a right. wider bandwidth
you said
to
this
be
last
in the
time.
Real
you
world.
You said the
yeah.
real world becomes horrible for
it's
them.
It's terrifying,
yeah.
right? And so I'm not suggesting that mom should yell at her kid to
no.
toughen him up or
yeah,
anything
exactly.
like that. Clearly,
wear costumes to dress as various bill collectors.
Right.
Well, is there anything we can do at this point about
I know.
Justin?
I was going to say, we need to, that kid, that mom's going to call me for some play therapy with that kid. I'm going to have to dress up like you. But I think what happens
it's
is,
easy. Cargo
you know,
shorts and a t-shirt.
is, you know, it's not our job to protect our children from feeling negative emotions. Our job is to walk with them through it. And so, you know, our kids, when we do have these ruptures and we, you know, we have these moments where we're not lovely and peaceful and whatever, is that then when we repair with them, we widen their tolerance for, okay, relationships can be messy and there's rupture and then there's repair and it's all okay, right?
Ah.
So that's kind of a good thing about all this. But, you know, I think the main thing about this, you know, and our kids would probably say that we're strict. We have really high mm-hmm. expectations for them and we do set really firm boundaries. And I frequently will say, I understand that this is really disappointing to you, but I am not changing my mind.
Yeah.
And so this is not at all about, you know, your kids knocking books off in the bookshelf and you're saying, oh, you're having such a hard time and you're just letting
Let
them.
Let me hug you.
yeah, and where the whole family right. is enslaved to the whims and emotions of the child. That is not this approach. This approach is really about being emotionally responsive and looking at the mind and the life, the child's experience beyond the behavior while using those behavioral moments as opportunities to build skills. Because
right.
we do, our whole approach is about building skills and making them the kind of kid, an adult who is self-disciplined, who knows how to care for others, who understands themselves, and who can tolerate discomfort and hard
right.
things in the world.
Here's what I just learned from listening to you is that it's a common thread in the beginning of the book where it says, you know, there's a constant reference. I don't know if it's intentional, but it's like things we've learned about the brain, new things that we've learned
yeah.
about development. And what I think is a fair way to address it is that it is an update on what could be considered an antiquated way of thinking when dealing with kids. It's like, here, you know, it's like, why would we do things the same way we did in the 50s? It's
That's
like,
right.
you know, why should we be racist or bigoted? You know what I mean? That's a behavior that is antiquated, that maybe what we're trying to do here is bring parenting into a new level and a different way of thinking on that level. And I think that if, you know, because it's when you, that's what you do. You foolishly look at something like this and go, well, if I do that, then my kid won't know what it's like to have a negative experience, right? But the reality is that we're all going to screw up. It's not like I'm going to read that book and then all of a sudden be the happiest person in the world. I'm still
And the
gonna...
world is going to hand them negative experiences
right,
anyway.
Exactly.
That's
but
right.
when you're raising them, and it's like that, I think it's like the moment of what really seems to be the common thread between the other book and then this one as well, is that this idea of secure attachment, that you if you do have a disconnect, that you reconnect.
That's
and that
right.
that reconnect is, as much as I'm guilty of it, is that I am also providing an example of the asshole that they will come across at
right.
the AMPM,
right.
even
or
though I'm also their father. But what I can also help them do is I could set a good example by going back
That's right.
and saying, my bad, or maybe not even necessarily saying my bad all the time, you know, maybe just saying, this is why I got upset and this
yeah.
is why I got frustrated. And we are both accountable in this situation.
That's right.
And that really what we're doing is we're bringing someone into like Scott's world of, you know, just literary academia. There are things that he knows about. I almost said Forrest Whitaker. That's not even right.
No.
Literary.
You know, but you know what I mean? Like there's an author that you could wax
Walt
poetic.
Whitman.
Walt
right.
Whitman. Thank you. So there's an author, Walt Whitman. I read a lot, Scott, that you could wax poetic on, but the rest of us wouldn't really have an understanding. You have an advanced understanding and concept. So if we do what you're talking about with reconnect and then kind of guiding them and helping them with the process, really all we're doing is we're giving them an emotional awareness of Walt Whitman level. You know,
That's
does that
right.
make sense?
That's
so it's
right.
like, so that when they grow up, they can just as easily identify, oh, that guy's just being an asshole. Oh, sorry for him. You know what I mean?
Right.
Without it making them go, oh my gosh, why was he nasty to me?
And
why
they
was...
can give other people the benefit of the doubt. Like, that guy must not have some skill building.
Right.
He needs some emotional regulation. There's a
right.
generosity. But and I know
Rather
we...
than seeing that other person's behavior as a definition of yourself.
That's
right.
right. Yeah. Well, and one of the biggest mistakes I think we've made in past decades is that, and I know we got to wrap
You're
up,
good.
is that we often see kids behave like, you know, like we were saying, you know, you don't expect a 2-year-old to read, right? Uh-uh. So you don't, you know, you're not going to punish them for not reading. And what happens is we have often punished kids for acting in ways that they have not yet had enough time or enough brain development or enough skill building around. And so it's almost like, you know, why I talk so much to parents and teachers about bringing curiosity to the discipline process is, you know, if a kid's behavior is a can't or a not yet or a only sometimes because I'm not fully there yet, and we punish them for doing something they can't help, that is like telling a dyslexic, like punishing a dyslexic person for not reading faster. Mm-hmm. And so then the kid knows they can't do it, that they were doing their best. And I'm not saying they do their best all the time, but these moments, then that, you know, you feel really terrible about yourself if you have someone coming down on you and being punitive where you don't have as much power for something you can't yet help. I mean, it you know, so that's a really important way, I think, that's part of what this new lens is. And the other thing I'll say was part of this new lens, and then I'll wrap up, is that I really believe, based on what I know about the brain and about child development and about relationships, that when kids are at their worst, that is when they need us the most. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times our discipline approaches communicate to them, I'm only interested in being connected to you and in relationship with you when you've got it all together and when you're nice and happy.
Yeah.
And so what I'm saying here is that, you know, when they are at their absolute worst, that is also a great opportunity for us to say, at your absolute worst, I'm here. And yeah, that is such an important shift in how we've thought about kids' behavior.
That's also terrific advice just for marriage.
Right, that's what I'm saying. That's what, that was where my mind first went. Yeah. It's incredibly interesting to me that we would easily dismiss that in a parenting situation, yet everybody understands that the true test of a marriage is when you're broke and you're turning in cans to put gas in the car,
right,
and you're at each other. After you come out of that,
you're eating au gratin every night.
Nothing but au gratin. It just sucks ass.
And that dynamic is also at work in podcasting partnerships.
I've never heard of that. It's a weird analogy that nobody gets, Adam.
But if we can think about when our kids are at their worst, that's probably when they need us mm-hmm. to soothe them the most and say, yeah, at your absolute worst, I'm right here, which is why I don't like the idea of sending kids away from us and, you know, you go to your room and come out when you're happy,
right,
and those kinds of things, is we really want to communicate.
I've never seen my kids.
right, is to say, at your worst, I'm here and I know you probably need me more and I'm right here.
Yeah. That is the wow moment for me.
That's really what this whole approach is about.
Yes.
So that is a new way of thinking about it.
So you can find more information about Dr. Tina Payne Bryson at tinabryson.com. You can get the description or the spelling for all that in the description of this very episode. She is on Twitter at Tina Bryson. The book, of course, available in all major retailers. If you want to support the show, you can click through our Amazon link at thedadpodcast.com. I will put a link up to purchase the book directly at facebook.com/dadpodcast. And all of that jazz. I think that's it. We did.
One more thing. I just realized. So if you go to my website, you can find my links to Twitter and Facebook. And we just posted something on my professional Facebook page that is a link to the first 50 pages of the book that people can get for free.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's a great way for people to say, is this for me or not, without having to.
And that's on your Facebook page. So they can link that at tinabryson.com. And if it's okay with you, I can also put that on our page, just so anybody who stumbles upon it there, too.
They can check it out and see if it feels like a good way for them to approach how they want to do it.
I cannot thank you guys enough for only what you do professionally, but for coming in here, taking the time. Scott, you're a sheer delight. I got to be honest with you.
I mean, I try to tell people that and nobody believes.
No, trust me. Yeah. They need to listen. Yeah. And I'm glad that she brought you in this time, because now I know you're safe. I know you're okay. I know you're cared for. I don't know if you need some secure attachment after this, but we can hug it out, bro. I'm here for you, even when you're at your worst. Do you understand? I'm here for you.
So good.
I can't wait to start your marital fight pool. This is all exciting information.
That's a fantastic idea.
So on behalf of our great friends, Scott, is it Bryson? That's your last? Scott Bryson, yep. Dr. Tina Payne Bryson. I like the full three names.
Yeah, it sounds fancy.
It is fancy. It goes beyond it.
I just want to give, you know, I want to give honor to my family's name.
Right? Yeah. Why not?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Why not? And, I thought that was your middle name. I'm sorry. So that is your maiden name.
That's my maiden name.
Your maiden name. That makes so much sense, too. I just thought it was like you were, all the examples are serial killers or presidential
right,
assassins.
Right.
But I thought it just sounds classy to have.
I'm actually a Tina Marie. Actually, I'm a Christine Marie. Christine Marie Payne is my birth name.
Dr. Christine Marie Payne Bryson. Yeah,
yeah,
that's too much.
So
Tina Payne Bryson just flows off. Tina Bryson feels
TPB.
TPB, yo. Yeah. TPB.
Hashtag.
On behalf of all of those people we named, Adam, Julia, myself, Justin Worsham, saying stay frosty.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
So that was our fantastic interview with Dr. Tina Payne Bryson.
I love her.
She is incredible. Her husband, obviously a delight. I'm a big fan. You know, that was the bummer is that this fucking kindergarten, we had to rush out because I had to pick up my kid. Yeah. And that's why we're kind of recording this posthumously, if you did. Yes, it is true. Both Adam and I have died. But don't fear not. There have been, much like the Beatles, we have recorded never-before-released tracks.
It was the Ebola that got us.
Yes, the Ebola eventually got us, which, again, you'll hear about in 3 weeks. We're jumping around so much in recording. Now we're both punchy.
This will be funnier.
Yes. In 3 weeks when you listen to Dr.
Yeah, you listen to the other one.
Much like Star Wars, and when you have to figure out which order you're going to watch them with your kids, you have to figure out which order you will listen to all these episodes. Do I wait until November? What should I fucking do? It'll all work itself out. But let's do a little moment of the week to wrap things up.
You made them. You love them. And sometimes you want to choke the living shit out of them. But occasionally they give you that one sweet moment. This is that moment. Moment of the Week, brought to you by Dad Gear. All your child traveling needs packed into stylish, practical perfection. Designed by real dads for real dads and moms. Don't be the guy with a diaper purse. Be the man with the Dad Gear diaper backpack. Go to thedadpodcast.com and click on the Dad Gear logo on the right-hand side. Made in the USA.
Don't forget, if you go to the Dad Podcast, click on that logo. We would like to throw as much ducats as we can towards these fantastic guys at Dad Gear. But if you use the promo code Dad Podcast, that gets you 15% off.
Sweet deal.
And if you do purchase your bag once it arrives, please send us a picture and post it on our Facebook page at facebook.com/dadpodcast.
We'd love to see that.
We have exciting news. Again, because we're recording these in bounce around order, you will see. I am very horrible at this, is what I'm learning. But you will see a pattern in that because we've been stockpiling episodes, that Mr. Lancini is frustrated with my ability to have moments of the week. But I have shot my wad prematurely, and now here I am at the very first week of this run, and I have nothing.
I love it.
I have absolutely not a damn thing. So I will just do what's it? I literally have nothing. Defer the floor is what I tried to say.
Sure, you were saying it as though it was
a common phrase. What's the thing? Well, yeah, it is a common phrase where it's like I will release the floor or give the floor. I will polish the floor. You don't want to say because you want to see me keep rambling
yes,
off like this.
I do.
I look like an idiot enough on the floor. Yield the floor. Thank you, Mr.
Yes,
Lancini.
I didn't know what it was either.
Because it was only one syllable. That's what the problem is. Or is it ye yield? Is it ye yield?
Yeah, just from the old English.
English. Ye yield.
Yeah.
Ye old ye yield. Anyway, my moment of the week is teaching my son English. There you go. All right, on to you, Mr. Lancini. Please don't die.
Hang on. Yeah, while I cough up. Along, I'm in such a good mood. No, I don't know. I am very punchy. This has nothing to do with my moment of the week, but there's a microphone in front of me.
It's fun. No, we're having a good time. We've done a lot of shows.
I wasn't looking forward to recording today. But
how dare you?
I know. I'm sorry. I was just so tired. I was like, it was one of those things where I was looking at the clock, going, "Oh, I could sleep for 27 minutes. I could just close my eyes for 3.5 minutes. You know, whatever it was. None of that happened."
I'm trying to remember which order of the shows because we've recorded a show where you started and you're like, and you said, "Just give me a minute. I'll warm up to it." And you did. You came around. So.
Yeah, but this one, I really feel great. I'm having a great time with the fans.
Yes,
and just
great fans,
engaging.
Very funny fans. Yeah.
Absolutely, and they don't let us get away with anything, which we love.
Right.
And they remember everything. Okay, so here's the thing. You know, if it's Paco and it's Moment of the Week, that it's going to have to be about something that's not, like, you know, the true mission statement of Moment of the Week. So we're going to go back in time once again to my own life and my own childhood, because I was just an adorable child.
I bet.
And I'm going to tell you a story about... I was turning 8.
I found that for you, just in case.
That's so fantastic. Oh, my God. This day just keeps getting better and better. So we were going to have a little party, but rather than do like a, you know, bring everyone over with the cake and the balloons and all that, we were going to go to the circus. We're going to go see probably Barnum and Bailey. Ooh. This is in, you know, Brooklyn, New York, many years ago, 41 goddamn years ago.
Wow.
Something like that. So I say eight, but I was probably seven. Anyway, so me and a couple of friends and my brother and my sister, probably my mother, not probably Juan Bedoya. I think by then they were already separated. Anyway, yeah, bring it up. Bring it up during your moment of the week. That's great. Yeah, your parents are divorced, fucko. So he wasn't there.
No, talk about it.
And I still, you know, I had to go on and I had to put on a show for my friends and, you know, not show the heartbreak that I was feeling.
Sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Oh, that was funny. Oh, that's great. You didn't think I was
We are really good at this.
Okay. I'm sorry.
By the way, give us your $24 fucking dollars for that alone. That was some brilliant fucking comedy, yuck yucks.
Right.
If you're not laughing in your cubicle, it's because you're a heartless bastard at that. That is funny shit.
Oh, my God.
The music bed and everything. We're a dynamic
team. You didn't know I was going to go down there with you.
I didn't know. I felt bad that I walked on
right.
it.
Right. No, it's all right. It's all right.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I enjoyed it
all the
more.
I'm going to mute my microphone. Like, do I? I'm out.
All right. So we're out there, right? And it's like not just Barnum and Bailey's. It's like Barnum and Bailey's on steroids because it's their 50th anniversary. It's every, you know, the elephants and the clowns and everything. You know, big, you know, packed circus tent with, I don't know, thousands of people, whatever it is. And towards the, at the very end of the show, the big finale, they bring out every act that you've seen. Oh, the tigers and the bears and the dogs and the clowns, everything. Exactly. Bring everybody out, and then they wheel out this enormous cake, and because it's their anniversary, they sing happy birthday. And I turn to my mom and I say, how did they know? I thought that Barnum and Bailey was singing happy birthday to me.
Oh my gosh.
And that thousands of people were joining in.
And then your mother quickly ruined this, or did she let it go?
You know what, I've never heard that story beyond my line.
Oh.
So I can't tell you.
Your childhood blocked the trauma out.
Well, there was lots of trauma at the hands of Cruella De Vil. But I think she understood it for the heartbreakingly sweet thing that it was.
And didn't ruin
it for me. But I thank you all for putting up with my odd stories of the week and giving me a forum in which to dig through these painful memories.
That was Moment of the Week, brought to you by Paco Lancini and Dad Gear. Next time you need a place to weep, just know that Dad Gear has a hidden pocket where you can grab a wipe or a Kleenex instantaneously. That's right, Dad Gear, available through the dadpodcast.com, the logo on the right-hand side. Get 15% off your tears by using the promo code DADPODCAST, poor Paco's childhood. All right, well, that was our show. Send us an email to show@thedadpodcast.com. You can always send questions for Dr. J and our fantastic family and sex therapist coming out later in the month, Rachel Gibbs,
right,
who has her own practice. Very exciting to announce that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So you could Skype in. Before, she was still logging all of her hours, but now she's done that. She's a full-blown doctor, everybody, so shit's getting real around here. You could like the show on facebook.com/dadpodcast. Please do that, because not only does it help us in acquiring more advertisers as well, but you can also find out, I post little articles there, and there's fun ways, lots of audience interacting not only with us but with each other, as we discussed earlier in this very episode. So you could do that at, again, facebook.com/dadpodcast. Follow the show on Twitter @dadpodcast. That's also, if you're not a big fan of Facebook, you could follow us on Twitter. Everything I post on Facebook hits Twitter as well. That's how that works.
It just keeps you updated on what's going on, extracurricular stuff that's going on for the show.
And I like that I'm updating people about common knowledge of social media like it's
right.
We've broken the code, everyone.
Tune in here for the latest.
At Justin Warsham, you can follow me on Twitter. Twitter, at The Real Paco L, to follow Paco Lancini on Twitter. Listen to the show live. The URL is right in the description of this very episode. It's mixlr.com/dadpodcast. You could chat with us, chat with other listeners while you're listening to the show. More than one person has commented about how fun it is to chat with other people while listening to the show.
It's so fun.
So
it's
we
so
cannot
cool.
oversell that enough, evidently. If you want to play games with us, coming up after our renovation, I'm going to book a day where we can play some kind of, have a gaming day with other dads. I think that'll be a lot of fun. You can add me as a friend on PlayStation at Justin Comedy. Add Mr. Paco Lancini at Call of Duty. The spelling and all the symbols you need are in the description of this here episode. Once again, another reason I'm tearing down the as of the time you are hearing this, I am just beginning the stages of tearing down everything. I'm taking this studio down to the studs, and we are soundproofing it. We're going to improve the acoustics in here a little bit, hopefully, unless I fuck it up more. I don't know. But you can go to Facebook.com/dadpodcast and see pictures taken. By the time you're hearing this episode, there should be at least a before. And then every day as I finish, I will post little photos of what's being done since then.
And by the time all of that is done, this show will be funnier.
Probably not a bit.
Well, you might be a better dad then. I don't know. Something is going to change.
Well, there will be 10,000 moments of the week because my sons and I will be building it together.
Oh,
We will weep. I will draw some kind of a cartoon in the studs for it to be found later.
You should.
But yeah, so like us at Facebook.com/dadpodcast. But the big thing, even more than all your likes, what I need, honestly, guys, is your money. Daddy's paying a lot of money to have this thing air-conditioned and everything. And so you can help my wife not yell at me. Not true. Never going to happen. But you could really honestly help us make this our full-time gig because we really love doing this almost as much as I think you love listening into it, if I can oversell it. Go to thedadpodcast.com. On the right-hand side, there's a couple of PayPal buttons. For just $24 a year, you could change our lives. If everybody listening to this right now did that, it would literally change our lives. You get all my comedy albums for free. You get premium episodes. And if we get a bunch of people, right now we have about 66 people. We've lost a couple this year, but also picked up a bunch. So we have 66 people. If we get that number to 100, we're adding an extra episode. And so it's not like you're just going to, you're putting towards the future. And I'll tell you what, I'll even take this. I'll put this out there. If you're listening to the show and saying, I'm reluctant to pay $24 a year for just one episode, then I would be willing to plan ahead and commit to a month where we do more than one episode, and you give me a number. How many in a week do you need? Because all I really want to do is make this my full-time gig. And so if I can meet you halfway and you could do the same, then we can butter this bitch. I'm not sure that's a term, but I decided to do it. I can't wait for that to be on a coffee mug. But if you hate PayPal, there's also a Patreon logo. Lots of people doing supporting the show through that. We appreciate it. And also,
well, here's the thing. Mm-hmm. I think that you already know it's the same old story. You roll down to the bottom of the page on the Dad Podcast webpage, and there's an Amazon banner. Look at that. It's right there. And you click on it, and it takes you through to Amazon, and then you hit the bookmark. And then every time you go back to Amazon, use that bookmark. Mm-hmm. And when you make your purchases, whatever they may be, Papa Bear and Little John, okay, you almost made it through, are gonna get a little taste. It's not gonna cost you anything, and it's gonna help us out a lot. Now he's gone.
I think I'm Little John. I think in this situation, I don't know.
I did put my hand
on myself.
You're
more of a Papa Bear. That's
okay, fine. In any case, it's a easy way to do it. You won't feel a thing. And and it will lift our hearts, and it will make this a going concern for
Here's
us.
Here's what I'm going to add as premium content. I hope this doesn't discourage, but if we get enough paid subscribers,
yeah,
Paco and I will show up for a mom's night, if you would, as Papa Bear and Little John.
I'm
and
in.
Do a little dance for you and your lady friends.
I am in. That sounds good.
Nice work, everyone. Sharp broadcast. Really good. Yep. Everyone on the floor as well. Really a lot of hustle. I liked it.
I don't know why I wanted to hit that button, but I did. So if you also like this podcast, you should also check out Justin is Married, Booker is Single. That's where I do a show with a local radio personality here in Los Angeles because he is in his mid-40s, has no desire to have children or get married. And I, of course, am married to my high school sweetheart, as all the people listening to this show know. We do about an episode twice a month, which so far has worked out to be one every 6 months. So we're working on fixing that. And, we're going to be having another one coming out on the 15th. That I know because it's supposed to be recorded tomorrow, but by the time you're hearing this, it's 2 weeks ago, as if that wasn't confusing enough. On behalf of our good friend, Dr. Tina Payne Bryson, and Paco Lancini, a.k.a. Adam Dooley, this is Justin Worsham saying, stay frosty.